So you may want to have the Colossians reading open in front of you. It was Colossians chapter 1. I'll be referring to that mainly. As I mentioned, during the school year, I travel around from independent school to independent school, telling them about GLOD. It's an awful name, but that's what we're called. Telling them about GLOD and our summer holidays and speaking in chapels or assemblies. And it's hugely varied work. And a lot of the time I'm supporting Christian teachers or chaplains. But I love it because a lot of the time I'm actually speaking to young people about Jesus. And I love challenging the common view that Christianity is somehow old-fashioned or it's boring or it's untrue. And I love sometimes actually that I do that in the most unexpected of context. So, for example, a few weeks ago I was at a boarding school in Yorkshire, and some of the boys invited me into their boarding house for a bit of a weekly ritual of theirs. And we all filed into the TV room. We huddled around the TV and they put on the TV show Geordie Shore. Now, I hope most of you have never seen Geordie Shore, but some of you might have done. Because Geordie Shore, well, let's say this, perhaps the less said about Geordie Shore, the better, because it's probably the most unwholesome show on TV. I mean, it makes Big Brother look about as innocent as Songs of Praise. But the boys who'd invited me to watch it with them, they knew I was a Christian. And so every ad break, what happened was they muted the TV and they turned around and they quizzed me about my faith, about why I was a Christian. And they fired question after question at me. They couldn't believe it when I told them that I'd left a job in Formula One to spend my time going around schools talking to people about Jesus. And so we spent all of those ad breaks talking about Jesus. But then the adverts would end, and then they'd kind of mute our Jesus conversation and get back to Geordie Shore. It was like Jesus went on mute until the next ad break, which got me thinking, if we're honest, don't we often do the same with Jesus? Don't we often just put him on mute from time to time when it suits us or when something more titillating comes along? I mean, granted, sometimes it's day-to-day stuff like family or school or homework or just to-do lists that can just drown Jesus out a little bit. But sometimes, at other times, we deliberately hit that mute button on Jesus, don't we? And when Jesus threatens our personal ambition, or when Jesus threatens some kind of personal gain, or when Jesus threatens our private pleasure, when what we want comes into conflict with what Jesus wants, we so often push Jesus to the back of our mind. We mute him so that we can keep living our life our own way. If we're not Christians, actually, we're doing that full time. We're muting Jesus completely. In fact, we've just been hearing about whole countries, haven't we, that are muting Jesus. And they're wanting to shut people up who will talk about him. But even if we are a Christian, well, we can be guilty sometimes of muting Jesus in our own lives when it suits us. Well, this morning, wherever we're coming from, whatever we believe at this point, I want us to try and grasp afresh two things that will help us with this. First, who Jesus is. And second, what he's done for us on the cross. If we grasp those two things, who Jesus is and what he's done for us on the cross, well, we won't want to mute Jesus anymore. We'll want to turn him up full volume, full blast in our lives. So first, who is Jesus? I mean, is there a bigger question that we could ever ask? It's massive. But in our reading from Colossians, I don't know if you spotted it, the Apostle Paul puts it as plain as day, the answer to who Jesus is. It's in verse 15. If you've got it in front of you, have a look. It says, he is the image of the invisible God. We know from the verse before, he's talking about the Son. He's talking about Jesus. So the Son, that's Jesus, is the image of the invisible God. That is a spectacular claim. It's not just saying that Jesus points to God or that Jesus tells us about God. No, It's saying that Jesus shows us God in himself. He is the image of the invisible God. That is to say, Jesus is God himself walking around in human form. I mean, whoever we are, whether we believe this or not, however long we've believed it for, that is a crazy claim. And just in case we hadn't got it into our brains, Paul in his letter then makes it even more crystal clear in verse 16. He goes on, he says, "For by him, by Jesus, all things were created, things in heaven and on earth, visible and invisible, whether thrones or powers or rulers or authorities, all things were created by him and for him." Do you realize that this is saying that Jesus made the world? He is nothing short of the creator and ruler of the whole universe. Therefore, verse 17, he is before all things, and in him all things hold together. That is, Jesus is pre-existent to the universe itself. He's before all things. I don't know if you've seen Professor Brian Cox's Wonders of Life or Wonders of the Universe on TV. Now, Brian Cox, I think he's a clever guy. He's a great communicator about amazing things in science that just make you go, wow, this universe is incredible. He's clever. But he and other astrophysicists, they have no idea what happened before the Big Bang. In fact, they would say to ask what happened before the Big Bang is a non-question. Because at the Big Bang, that's when everything came into being, time and space itself. There was no before the Big Bang. So it doesn't make any sense to ask what was before the Big Bang. Well, this is saying actually that Jesus didn't just exist before the Big Bang. It's saying that Jesus was the before the Big Bang. He was that before. In other words, Jesus defines existence itself. Jesus didn't just exist before the Big Bang. It's Jesus that defines existence. It's Jesus that gives everything else its existence. And in him, it says, all things hold together. That is, right now, this universe and you and I exist and keep on existing because Jesus says so. He is the sustainer of everything as well as the creator. These are astonishing claims, aren't they? If it's true, it's mind-blowing that a guy who walked around 2,000 years ago, who we could have touched and seen with our own eyes and spoken to, is the creator and sustainer of the whole universe right now, every second. If it's not true, well, Christianity is the most outrageous lie ever told. And we shouldn't have bothered coming here this morning. If it's true, why would we want to mute this Jesus? Why would we want to ignore the creator and sustainer of the universe? In Jesus, we can get to know the one who made us, the one who truly knows who we are, and therefore what our life is for. Some of us, though, we might have mixed feelings about getting to know our creator. Many of us would have said things like, well, look, if there's a God, he's not very good at his job, is he? I mean, look at the world, look at the poverty, look at wars, look at all the suffering. Where is this Jesus in all that? Or even more personally, where was Jesus when this person that I love died? Where was Jesus when I lost my job or when I lost my spouse? These are real questions, aren't they? They're questions that it's good to wrestle with, questions it's normal to struggle with. And I've done my fair share of struggling with these questions, even in my 33 years. But for me, this is where the cross comes in. You see, it's when we understand what Jesus has done in dying on that cross that all of our questions are answered. So on the cross, Jesus has shown decisively, once and for all, what kind of God we have. He's not a God who's distant from suffering. He's not out of control of the world. No, he's the one who's entered the world into history to suffer and die for us. Not just for us, in fact, but instead of us. In verse 19, it goes on, God was pleased to have all his fullness dwell in him, and through him to reconcile to himself all things by making peace through his blood shed on the cross. We should read that verse and say, what? It's the most staggering idea. Not only that Jesus is the glorious creator and ruler of the universe, but that that creator and ruler willingly allowed himself to be beaten and abused at the hands of creatures that he had made. And then allowed himself to be nailed to one of his own trees. I mean, that's staggering enough. But even more staggering is that in doing so, he did what only he could do, making it possible for a holy and perfect God to forgive wicked and undeserving people. People like you and me, actually. You see, our attempts to mute Jesus, our tendency to push him to one side when it suits us, well, it shows that in a way, we're just like those who had Jesus crucified. I mean, we don't think of ourselves often in those murderous kind of terms, do we? But we, just like them, don't want a king to rule us. We often want to rule ourselves. And so when the King of Kings visited Earth, we muted him. In the strongest possible way, we crucified him. This is how we treated Jesus, the King of Kings, when he came to us. And this is how we treat Jesus today, when we push him away when it suits us. He should have been received as the rightful Lord and King of all things, shouldn't he? But we nail him to a cross instead. Amazingly, though, Jesus took that cross so he could reconcile us, says God. Reconcile us, says Paul, to God. He took that cross to reconcile us to God. He took the punishment that we deserve for our scandalous rejection of the King. Not just scandalous, actually, but treasonous. He took that punishment, though, so we could be totally forgiven and made right with God. Forever. Have you grasped this for yourself? Have you grasped the incredible love that Jesus has shown us on that cross? Have you grasped that he has made friendship with God possible, in fact, open to anybody who wants it, simply by faith, simply by trusting in what he has done? I ask you, Have you been reconciled to God personally? Have you accepted the forgiveness and friendship with God that only Jesus can offer? Or are you still his enemy? We didn't read this bit before, but if you've got Colossians open, look down at verse 21. It's just after the section we had read, but it says this. Once you were alienated from God and were enemies in your minds because of your evil behavior. But now he has reconciled you by Christ's physical body through death to present you holy in his sight without blemish and free from accusation if you continue in your faith, established and firm, not moved from the hope held out in the gospel. But some people say things today like, it's good to have faith in something. I mean, when I go from school to school, I find young people think it's very trendy to say, look, it's great to have faith in something. It's good, you know, whatever works for you. Have faith in something. Choose what suits you. It doesn't really matter what your faith is in. Just have faith in something. But no. No. Is your faith in this gospel, this incredible news that Jesus died to reconcile you to God, is your faith in that? Because that's what matters, whether your faith is in that. If it is, then you are reconciled to God and you can take great comfort. If it's not, you remain his enemy. We're about to sing an amazing hymn, one of my favorites, called When I Survey the Wondrous Cross. Can I ask, do you think of the cross as wondrous? Because whether you do think of the cross as wondrous will be a pretty good measure of what your faith is in. Whether you think the cross is wondrous will give a pretty good indication of what you think Jesus did there. But it gives you a pretty good indication of who you think Jesus is. Remember from our other reading, there were two criminals that were crucified either side of Jesus. And they both surveyed that cross, didn't they? From crosses of their own, in fact. But only one saw the cross of Christ as wondrous. One of them, the first one, he looked at Jesus on the cross and he hurled insults at him. He said, "Aren't you the Messiah? Save yourself and us." He thought it was pathetic. To him, the cross was just this pathetic failure of this kind of jumped up religious leader. Maybe a sad day, but it was a failure. But the other criminal surveyed that same cross and he came to a completely different conclusion, didn't he? I'll read you what he said. So the second criminal, he rebuked the first and he said, "Don't you fear God, since you're under the same sentence? We're punished justly, for we're getting what our deeds deserve. But this man, Jesus, has done nothing wrong." Then he said, "Jesus, remember me when you come into your kingdom." Jesus, remember me when you come into your kingdom. That's an incredible statement of faith. Here's this wicked man, a criminal, who recognizes not only his own sin and what he deserves, but he recognizes who Jesus is and what he was doing for him on that cross. "Jesus, remember me," he said, "when you come in your kingdom." And Jesus' response to him is wonderful. "Truly, I tell you, today you will be with me in paradise." So what will your reaction be to the king on the cross? Will you mock him? Will you continue to have him on mute? Or will you recognize him for the king that he is and ask to be part of his kingdom? Because if Jesus really is this eternal king, then eternity really is at stake. Don't mute Jesus. Let's worship him. Let's thank him. Let's live for him. Amen.